I'm so hard to
put it in here.
Right.
Can we get started?
No.
Can we get out of here?
No.
Yes.
I can't apologize for you chairing the meeting today. So
start. I already had two bang me today.
Whoa.
You know what I'm talking about.
At your age, we do.
She's innocent all of a sudden.
Oh, here we go.
Recording on.
Yes. Okay. Oh my goodness, who we got here today? Okay, we got Councilwoman Kibacker, Councilman Sheldon, co-chair, Dave Tackett, Councilman Bell, Councilman Smiley, I think, Councilman Penrose Holland, Councilman Cartier, Councilwoman Diller, and Councilman Weiner.
Has anyone seen Councilman Street?
He was hanging around.
Oh, okay.
President. Oh, yeah, there he is. Good to see. Bill was sitting in front of him. And Councilman Street. You
I slid back.
Okay. What's your pleasure on the minutes?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. First on the agenda, we have to rename a segment of segment located between Pulaski Highway and Biddle Avenue of the residential street recorded as Frenchtown Road to Biddle Avenue. Councilman Tackett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, this is just a more of a procedural move to correct the naming on a road that should have always been this in the first place, because even it's if you tried to follow it on the GPSs and everything, you wouldn't even be able to get there. And we have businesses in the area and everything, so like I said, it's been through the department. I don't know if General Manager Eileen would like to speak on it, or but it's met all the requirements. It's been through the department. They even have.
I think we're excited about it. I think that's the main thing.
This is just a name change.
I'm sorry, I'm ahead of you, Ron. I'm this. I was going to say it's 182,000 square feet. We're not that excited.
Okay. if you're this excited, wait till you see what we got next.
Yeah. We're going right down to that.
Any questions from council?
I know we have the applicant here. I don't know if you'd like to just mention anything. It's all,
just
but it's
you answer any questions you might have.
Okay, yeah. But like I said, this is just a correction, and it's been a long time. It should have been done a long time ago. It's just one of those things that kind of got put off. And
okay, any questions from the public? Okay, and I feel to mention my aide, Chrissy Roberts, is here, and myself. Go right on. Okay. Is that okay, Janet?
That's good. Okay, I'm happy. You. I'm excited.
Oh, my. Do you start it again? All right. Number two, plan of Federal Express, Newcastle County 100, north side of I-295, approximately 2,800 feet east of Route 9, west side of Norfolk Southern Railroad, to construct 182,815 square foot warehouse distribution building on 72.65 acres. And it's zone HI, Castle Street. Are you still here? No, he's not.
He was, but he took a call.
See, I mentioned
it. Well, we don't put names on it anymore. It's District 10. He's in the lobby signing for a UPS baggie.
Yes, can you go to the next one,
come
back.
Okay. Is that all right with council?
Take it back.
All right, we're on number three. Okay, plan of Rockwood Parcel 1C, Newcastle County 100, southeast corner of Rockwood Road and Church Road, 0.25 miles south of US 40, to construct one apartment building with 90 units, four parking garages, and other site improvement. NCAP, which is apartments. Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This particular project we've discussed in the past, and pretty much self-explanatory as far as constructing one apartment building, 90 units. We talked before about the changing the height, which was done so that the architectural appearance of the building could conform with the other buildings on the property and everything. We still, at this point, have not received any adversarial comments on this plan. Any questions that have been asked, the applicant and counsel for the applicant have actually responded to, and are always open to work with the community and everything, which we highly recommend. So we have the applicant and counsel for this particular project here to make the presentation.
Okay. Does you want the applicant up, Bill? Speak on it.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members of council. For the record, my name is Sean Tucker. I'm a land use attorney here in Wilmington, and I represent the applicant in regards to the Rockwood application. I'll be brief and open it up to questions, of course. Just to give folks a full scale, or maybe a bird's eye view, I should say, of the site. The portion we're here about today is parcel 1C, which is this bottom left-hand corner, and that's where the 90 units would be located. This area up here and to the right, that's another section that's parcel 1A, and that's going through the process right now. So that's not quite here yet, but that's coming through. And then this section here, parcel 1B, is already built. So essentially, this is a three-phase project. In terms of application fees, that's very good for the county because they get application fees for each one, as opposed to this all coming through as one application. And Petnaro has been very successful with 1B, and that's driving the other phases, of course, coming online as part of the review process with the department. This land is currently zoned NCAP. This is former code zoning, so it's preserved under the former code densities, which allow the apartments. The traffic analysis was done in concert with DLDOT when this property was rezoned originally by council many moons ago before the UDC. There were deed restrictions entered into so that certain road improvements would have to occur in conjunction with certain buildouts. And some additional road improvements are required by the Route 40 study for this area. So all of those improvements have been pinned down with DLDOT. DLDOT, of course, has issued its letter of no objection. And there will be a code-compliant traffic improvement plan that will be tied to the development of this in its phases. Councilman Bell had mentioned we did come before you on a deed restriction change some time ago. There had been a limitation on height put on the property generally, and we were able to seek some relief in that regard only for architectural features because we wanted to do, or my client wanted to do something special with the roof lines, and so it was only to allow for a pitched roof and some architectural features, and that, of course, was approved, and we appreciated that. So we're here before you today on what we believe is a code-compliant application consistent with existing zoning. And have not received any objections or complaints to date. Thank you.
Anything from council?
Councilman Warner.
Thank you. Sean, what are the contiguous uses? I see an elementary school, but can you walk us through the perimeter all the way around?
Sure. There, you're right. Here's the leisure school here on this side. There's a set of railroad tracks, I believe, that cut through here. Correct, Andrea, and this is Andrea Farnowski with Petnaro. And Andrea, the use on this side, you recall what that is today, is that's a residential community.
Residential, yes. Below and to the right, and Elizabeth Plaza.
Which is commercial.
Left, small commercial.
Thank you.
Can you comment on the transit orientation of the site?
Well, Councilman Weiner, we anticipated that question.
Really?
And Monica Sloan was kind enough to bring a special slide just for you. And the rest of council, of course.
And pedestrian friendliness as well.
Yes. And I'll let Monica comment on these pictures and the bus stop.
And then I have another question after that, but I'll reserve that until I get the answer.
All I did was took a look at where the existing bus stops are in the area. And, you know, we are working with DelDOT on these plans, but there is a bus stop here, there's one here, our site is down here, and there's another one over there.
What's the distance in terms of walking? Because typically folks will walk 5 blocks at most to a bus stop.
They are farther than that away.
Okay. Or the, is it a 10-minute walk or further?
10 to 15-minute walk, depending on if you're walking with kids or walking by yourself and you're late.
Okay. And
hold on a minute. 10 minutes
with what?
Kids, hold on a second, please. Can you identify yourself for the recording?
Oh, I'm sorry. Monica Sloan, North Point Engineering.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair. So as far as the sidewalks in the area around the site as well as to the bus stops, can you comment on them?
Yes, there are sidewalks through the site that lead out to Church Road. There's a sidewalk along Church Road. There are sidewalks all along Rockwood Road here.
Okay. And Sean, I wanted to get back to your comment about the requirement to comply with DelDOT standards. What is the LOS requirements in this part of the county?
You have the LOSD minimum, although I believe, Councilman, that if you're an existing E, that is permissible.
Yes.
But this would be standard LOS consistent with the rest of the county in a developed area.
And do you know now if all the intersections operate at LOSD?
It is my understanding, based on the Churchman Crossing study update, the Route 40 study update, that the improvements that are planned for Route 40, in combination with the projected improvements, such as this application, there will be adequate levels of service.
Okay, well, of course, adequate could also mean an LOSE turning vector, which
that's
might
right.
be an E, but that's still within that acceptable definition.
That's correct. Based on the study that I've seen and working with DelDOT, what makes this a little unique is some of these units, because they were tied to deed restrictions with certain road improvements, fall under the older regs. Some of it falls under the newer.
Yes.
But based on our last meeting with DelDOT and a review of the Route 40 study, it's my understanding, generally, that this whole area, not just around us, but literally the whole corridor, will operate at what is code-driven acceptable levels of
right.
service for both the county and DelDOT.
And hopefully, this is to the Land Use Department, should we adopt transects, we'll be able to strategically use LOSE in pedestrian precincts in order to enhance walkability and pedestrian friendliness.
Councilman Cartier.
So you're able to go forward and develop this apartment complex under the old NCAP zoning?
That's correct, Councilman.
And what is the density allowed under NCAP?
Under the older language, you could actually get up to 17 DUs per acre. In this, or maybe even a little bit more than that, maybe 18. Under this plan, we are at 90 units on 10.6 acres. So what's our overall density, Monica? we'll have it in a moment, Councilman.
Not about 10.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's 10.648, so it's about 9 per acre.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, about 9 per acre.
The other zoning category under the Unified Development Code is ST.
That would be the current.
And that allows?
About 78 DUs per acre.
78 DUs. And this
generally.
This is, again, what?
This is about 9.
Okay.
So it's not the higher end that you could have gotten under the old apartment zoning designation, but it's more than what the UDC would permit today.
Thank you.
Slightly.
Councilman Claggett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, obviously, not foregoing, you know, the infrastructure, but I can remember years ago meeting with Gregory Pettinaro, even when they were planning this facility, when I was on the 740 Alliance myself, and the board had met with him, and, you know, he laid out a vision that he was very excited about, you know. And I think today, at least from the appearances, you see that, you know, facility when you drive past the down Route 40, because I do take in right across Route 40. I have that whole area. It does project itself very nicely. It looks well. It has a very nice entrance off 40 and Obviously, when we are looking to develop something in this manner, especially with all the open space around it, you know, like I said, not for going the infrastructure, but this is an ideal spot for this, you know.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just to kind of summarize here, the applicant did make a presentation before the 7 and 40 Alliance several months back. There was no opposition from the Alliance, and as Councilman Tackett had mentioned, I think that they've been a good neighbor. You know, certainly the infrastructure is in place, whether you look at emergency services, transportation, the highway system, shopping. You know, there's, as we speak, there's additional pharmacies and service stations being built along that corridor. So all in all, it's a good fit for the area, and it's a very well-maintained property. I normally try to go out and take a look at a site without looking suspicious, which is hard to do sometimes, but they kind of rode around and took a look, and whether it's the garages and the buildings themselves, the property is very well maintained.
Anything else from council? Anything from the public? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Peggy Schultz. I'm from the League of Women Voters of Newcastle County, and I have a couple of questions.
Sure,
one is
sure.
Very predictable. Would you point to the place on the state strategies map and tell us which level it's in?
We're going to be either a level one or a level two. Monica, can you try? The scale is obviously a little difficult, but let's see if we can get close here. I believe we're a level one. So we would be, Peggy, we would be in this block here, and you see that's in the dark red, so we are at a level one, it would appear, even though the scale is a little difficult.
And one more question.
Sure.
You said that you all have been in communication with Delgado about transit and all. Does that include DART? Has DART given you specific recommendations about this place?
I don't know that DART weighed in directly. They fall under DLDOT now, but I'd have to defer to Monica.
There were no comments from them regarding this site. They are invited to comment during the review.
There's simply no comment from them.
Yeah, there was nothing that they requested from the plus review.
Okay. Welcome.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Council.
Okay, we'll go back to FedEx. Councilor Street.
I'll give deference to the applicant.
Thank you, Councilman.
All right.
Mr. Ziegler is here in regard to this application, as well as our traffic engineer, Nicole Klein. And you are. And I'm Sean Tucker for the record, counsel to the applicant. Thank you, Chair. Council, this property, as the chairman correctly indicated, is currently zoned HI for heavy industrial, so this is not a rezoning. The property is approximately 72 acres in size, about 42 acres of that is marshland. 30 acres is high and dry for the most part, and that's where you see the building and the parking. Holloway Terrace is located on this side of the property that I'm circling here. I will note that the parking was designed to be away from Holloway Terrace to help reduce noise. There is also a berm that is being built as part of this plan. It's going to be approximately 15 feet in height. I can let Mr. Ziegler drill down into the specifics on that to further reduce any noise migration that may head in that direction. There are a tremendous number of wetlands and tidal wetlands in this area of the property, the 42 acres that I've mentioned. We did discover that the property owner apparently had filled some of that improperly some time ago, many, many moons ago, more than a decade ago, actually. And so we did have to go before the county RPATIC board and the Board of Adjustment to address that. And the way that, that we addressed that, and that was approved through the appropriate bodies, was the new owner, which is a company called Westmoreland, who's going to lease them to Federal Express. Westmoreland agreed to do some Phragmite kill off, cost about $20,000. It's already been sprayed, by the way, which will help dramatically, according to our consultant, Jim McCauley, restore the tidal wetlands, which today are not in ideal shape. There's a lot of growth from the Phragmites that's clogging up the, those areas and creating some stagnation. Jim has had experience with that at the peninsula down in Sussex, and he's been very successful with this method. The both RPATIC, the Department of Land Use, and ultimately the Board of Adjustment looked at that proposal, looked at the fill that was going to be removed. Some was going to stay, but there was going to be the Phragmite kill off and the mitigation, and viewed that as a positive, and ultimately they were satisfied the legal standards were met to clean up that problem we encountered along the way, along the approval path. And we have also, of course, met with our neighbors and the community next door. We've had maybe two or three community meetings to discuss the project. And at first, there was certainly some concern about the trucks. Apparently, there's an existing problem, unfortunately, and there's been some one significant problem that occurred. I understand from Councilman Bell in this area, because it used to be his district before Councilman Street. And we actually have a note on the plan. It's one of the DLDOT special notes that requires Federal Express trucks or any trucks that may operate on this facility to use the designated truck route, which does not permit trucks through the community. Apparently, there's some current offenders, some other truck drivers that are not FedEx for the most part, I understand, that we're trying to get under control. But this facility will be de-restricted in that regard per this note, and we're happy to make the county a party to that note if it would like. And Councilman Street, I'm sorry, So there is a note on the plan on that that's a DLDOT note. We are certainly happy to make the county a party to that note, and I believe we offered that to the community as well, but of course council would have to be agreeable to that note and being a party to that note. We've also offered to the community that we could do private deed restrictions to the benefit of the community if they'd like that, and that's certainly something we can record as well if the community wants something separate and apart, because we know the truck issue is a very sensitive concern and we understand why. So that is the application in a nutshell. I am certainly happy to answer any questions as best I can regarding the applicant and the intended leasing to FedEx. And I believe our planning director also had some comments that she wanted to make as well.
Councilman, do you want to say anything first? Or?
Well, just to follow through, I have not met directly with Mr. Tucker. Mr. Tucker has met with Civic Association. I personally, from the inception, had great concerns about this project, proximity to wetlands, and of course, I don't like heavy industry that close to residential anyway. I think it's absurd, but Mr. Tucker met with the Civic Association. The problem of traffic was discussed extensively. It was worked out to the satisfaction of the Civic Association and the residents. And quite frankly, the residents are put in a situation where nobody likes heavy industry in their area. But if you look at FedEx versus other potential industries, we think we've come out pretty good in terms of the current situation. So there's not a lot of opposition here, and the applicants met in good faith with the community, and I think they've done a good job in trying to resolve concerns and issues brought forward by the community.
Ms.
Ferguson?
Yeah, I was the councilman just covered most of what I wanted to share, and that was the primary issue.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. Could she identify herself for the record?
Parking
not parking, of going through the neighborhood, and there's been a lot of work on the applicant's part.
Just state your name for the record, please.
Eileen Fogarty, Land Use General Manager. But the other issue is that there are a lot of jobs coming with this application in completion, about 262. And in bringing the application through the process, it went through for our process because of coordination with DLDOT at a decent rate speed, not a, you know, not lightning by any means. And we've just done a time and motion study to look at all applications, and we're using this application as one of the examples of where we can speed, particularly in our communications and interactions with DLDOT, where we can speed the processing. So we are excited.
Councilor Swann?
Yeah, I just inquired because it's FedEx. Given the close proximity to the interstate, is this the heavy haul terminal where the doubles will be coming in?
There will be some doubles coming in. It'll mostly be the more typical panel trucks that you're used to seeing, but there will be doubles coming in. This will be a regional hub.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because it has to be within a certain distance. So this is the terminal I lost?
Unfortunately, yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Unfortunately, thank you.
That was right when the economy had turned, yeah. Unfortunately, yes.
So close, yet so far away.
Councilman Bell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Both living, growing up in the area, being a fire chief in the area, counsel to the applicant had mentioned, the concern of the community with Lamson's Lane. And that is specifically, the concern. Lamson's Lane is currently being used by some tractor trailers, as well as West Avenue and Holloway Terrace. The community and representatives of the community, including Councilman Street, who represents the area, have met with Delaware State Police and our county police in trying to cure that problem. But in no way, shape, or form will I or anyone in the community support Lamson's Lane from Newcastle Avenue down to where the industrial park begins at East Avenue as a truck route. And any move afoot by DLDOT or the applicant to try to get that changed to a truck route will meet with tremendous opposition. I experienced firsthand in the fire department a little child that lost its life on Lamson's Lane, kind of out there playing along the curb several years back. And was sucked in underneath the back of a tractor trailer. So it's something that the community is aware of. We do not need tractor trailers, any tractor trailers, using public highways and that go through communities. That being said, I think that when you take a look at infrastructure and we talk about economic development, we talk about jobs and employment, this is an area that we've talked about hoping to have other areas that are shovel ready. This is an area that's adjacent to interstate highway systems, and if they use the lower part of Lamson's Lane, Pigeon Point Road, out to 495, they can go over to 295, I-95, both north and southbound, 495 north and southbound. So it's a property that is ready, and it can bring economic growth, development, and jobs. And but like I say, the concerns that were mentioned by Councilman Street is the primary concern of the community, and hopefully we can work through that and have DLDOT's full support. And not trying to make any changes to that upper part of Lamson's Lane.
Councilor Smalley?
I'm just curious. Will the truck route be Terminal Avenue to Pigeon Point Roads to Lamson's Lane? Or
if I may, Councilman, yes. Ms. Klein, give that presentation. We've got a map for you in case that came up.
Nicole Klein, McMahon Associates, traffic engineer for the applicant. So this map gives you an idea of what the truck route is. The site is here at the bottom of the page. They will be required to come up Davidson Lane, turn right onto Lamson, use Pigeon Point Road out to Terminal to directly access 495, and the same in reverse. So that is the route they are restricted to. DLDOT pulled the restriction along Lamson Lane for us, and they indicated to us in writing that they would not support a modification to that restriction either. The restriction is no vehicles 5,000 pounds or greater. So that even applies to, you know, FedEx's larger vans. They will, all FedEx vehicles will be required to use this route, and they understand that.
It also applies to Hummers.
Yeah, it probably would.
It does.
and Westmoreland did not seek a change to that. Westmoreland understood this would be the route. We've had lengthy discussions with them. We found out actually from the community that apparently a lot of the truck drivers' GPSs today are programmed under existing mapping to take people out through this community, which is just silliness to me. But when I first heard it, I thought, well, that sounds like silliness. But literally, the neighbors confirmed that they had looked into it themselves. And so there is an effort underway, I will tell you, and Westmoreland is assisting to try to have the newer updated maps when, you know, you update your GPS downloads to try to adjust that so that the unfamiliar truck driver doesn't just hit any truck driver, not just FedEx, but any truck driver doesn't hit their, you know, GPS and get sent to this community because there's no reason for it.
Councilor Street?
And that was one of the things that I appreciate, the fact that, you know, you've made a commitment not to come down Lansing Lane, and if you can do it, then all the other similarly situated businesses can do it, and quite frankly, I expect for them to do it. However, the offer that you make with council's willingness, anywhere that it can be reflected in writing and put in plans, and I can assure the longevity, to the extent practical, I would like to see that done.
Councilman Warner.
Thank you. Sean, could you or one of your associates comment on the transit orientation and bike ped friendliness of this site? Probably more for employees rather than residents.
Yes, thank you, Councilman.
Sure.
Ms. Klein.
Yeah, I can handle that question. There is, I think, understandably, a lot of sidewalk along Lamson's Lane through the residential area.
Just your name every time you...
Sure. Nicole Klein, McMahon Associates. So through the residential area, there's a pretty well-connected sidewalk network. There are bus stops. As part of our satisfying DLDOT's requirements, we are currently coordinating with DTC and DART. We will be adding sidewalk all the way down Davidson Lane and out to opposite Harborview Drive. And then we will be coordinating with DTC to most likely put a bus stop at the intersection of Davidson and Lamson. They would like to see a transit stop here for the exact reason that you stated, for the employees' use primarily, and for others in the center similarly. So we'll be coordinating with them. Most likely we're looking at, you know, the Davidson-Lamson area for a bus shelter, a full bus stop.
And sidewalks internal to the site for pedestrians once they get off the bus stop, so that we have pedestrian friendliness on site as well as walking across a sea of asphalt to get to the front door.
And before Mr. Ziegler, make sure you state your name for the record, but also, Councilman, understand that one thing that's unique about these sites, as I understand it, is they are gated and they're locked down, and it's, believe it or not, it's not so much to prevent folks from getting in, to prevent folks who work there from getting out through unauthorized points where things could disappear. So there are some
security
issues that, you know, are involved here. But good.
Hi, I'm Mark Ziegler with McBride and Ziegler, and the parking area for the employees is located to the east of the building. And to follow up on what Sean said, basically, when trucks come into the site, they go around the employee parking area, and they have a loading dock area in the front and a loading dock area in the back. This area right here, the customer or the employee parking area is fenced off, and there's a sidewalk or a path that leads right to the building. So that's
okay. Suppose employees were to take a bus. When they get off the bus, are they going to have to play try to hide from the cars, or is there a safe way to get the pedestrians to their front door?
They could take a, well, first of all, a bus could come onto the site. I mean, this site can accommodate tractor trailers.
Yeah, but DLDOT's...
So, but, I mean, if
that's something we'll have to coordinate, Nicole Klein. Right. That's something we'll have to coordinate with DTC. We haven't selected the bus stop location yet. It seems to make more sense to put it out at Lamson and Davidson because then it would be able to be used by more people.
Yes.
We are building the sidewalk then all the way down down Davidson Lane into the site, but there are other possibilities as we go through that coordination.
Right. And this is just a basic principle. Not only should transit sites be intermodal, but they should be multimodal. Mm-hmm.
Anything else from council? Sean? Okay, go ahead.
It's a very interesting project, and I think a lot of thoughts going on to protect the community as much as possible. And, you know, best of all, we're going to bring some real employment here. I guess my question would focus more or less toward, you know, this, you know, set of notes on the plan that are kind of above and beyond the typical notes you would see. Maybe if you could just describe those again.
Yes, Councilman. There is a very specific note that DLDOT required, and we, of course, agreed to early on in the process, that ties in the existing truck route that Ms. Klein identified to this plan. So if the truck drivers were not to follow that, they would be in violation of that DLDOT provision, and DLDOT could take enforcement action. In addition, and this would have been on the plan before it got here, but literally because of time deadlines, the Mylars went from Mr. Ziegler's office right to here. And so I plan to address it in front of all of you. As I indicated earlier, I offered that we're happy to make the county a beneficiary of that same note if the county wants to be a beneficiary of that note. And that would, based on my reading of county law, give the county code enforcement folks authority if, in fact, those trucks were not following the designated route. And the property owner, which is my client, Westmoreland, would be cited for that. And I've had that discussion with my client, I will tell you, and they're addressing that in their lease with FedEx so that they understand this is very serious, it's very important, there are financial repercussions, significant ones, and you know that water, or, you know, trickles down to the drivers too. I mean, they understand the horror story that Mr. Bell shared should never happen, and the last thing FedEx would want is for something like that to ever happen again. So we're doing everything we can, we think legally, to tie a knot on this and to create an enforcement mechanism, but we also wanted to make sure county council was comfortable and ultimately code enforcement would be comfortable with that as well.
Okay, Sean, I believe when we Councilman Tackett and I met with you on this. We asked about the wages, what the proximity of how the wages would be on this.
Councilman, I don't have the exact wage ranges for you today. I will get them to council before the meeting next week. I apologize. I have the job numbers, and I'm sharing them with Ms. Fogarty. I'm going to guess if I can steal my notes back. Thank you. Just in terms of the projections, and Ms. Fogarty accurately had stated, the ultimate build-out is estimated at just over 300 jobs. But there are a combination of full-time and part-time jobs, as well as contract driver jobs. And the contract driver jobs I found somewhat interesting. Apparently, you can buy your own FedEx truck and go into business for yourself. And there's a lot of entrepreneurs that do that around the country. And of course, the benefit of that is you, and I don't have the exact scale, but it's my understanding those folks would make more money as entrepreneurs having their own business than if they were simply employees. There's more risk, of course, because you have to buy your own insurance and there's liability issues. And so in terms of the breakout, in year 2015, 2016, the estimate is 25 full-time jobs, 74 part-time jobs, and about 69 contract driver positions. In 2016, 26 full-time jobs, 79 part-time, 73 contract drivers. In 2017, 27 full-time, 84 part-time, 77 contractor positions. And this, these are estimates, but these are based on FedEx projections and square footage and need. And then ultimately at full build-out at 2027, which is a little bit out there, but at full build-out, they're anticipating 42 full-time jobs, 147 part-time, and about 115 contract driver positions. And that's where the 300-plus number comes from that I shared with Ms. Fogarty earlier. So that is a breakout. I will get my head around the different wage points at each one of those levels and ask that that be addressed. I will tell you, Westmoreland representatives are flying in for the meeting next week, and will be at council for that. They could not make today, but they will be here next week.
Councilman Smiley?
Yeah, I would just suggest that they're going to have owner-operators, which is, I don't know if they've changed it since my time out of the industry, but if it's someone who buys a truck, has a contract carrier or owner-operator. Although, historically, the company rules apply to everyone, but since such an amount of focus has been put on the route to and from the terminal, I would suggest that they take a look at implementing in their contract that failure to follow the designated route of the company can result in an immediate termination of the contract and forfeiture of any benefits that have been accumulated. That's a little, I mean, recognizing any driver that's out there, if they get stopped, the ticket belongs to them, not the company.
Well, with DelDOT, I think that's right. If the county had enforcement, it would actually probably apply to the property owner.
Well, you're talking about code, but I'm talking if they're out on that road, if they're coming in over the $5,000 road, they're coming down the public road, down the state road, and they get a ticket for being overweight, there's oversized, whatever, then that goes to the driver. But I just say, if you're going to have owner-operator, that's just another little thing. I think if you're looking to solidify, that doesn't hurt to put that in there, because there's a lot more at stake. And that will also send a message to those company drivers. If they're that serious to put it in a contract with an owner-operator, then they're serious about enforcing this, and we need to stay on the designated route.
Councilman Street?
Between the two of you, is it my understanding now that there was a meeting with you and council members?
Yes, I had met with the chair and co-chair of Land Use Council. Right, that's correct.
Then you know what? What you should have done is got the chair and the co-chair to sponsor this. Y'all need to play with people who play. There you go.
Anything from the public?
Thank you. Just, if I may, just for the record, I can see Councilman Street's upset. My office did reach out to meet with Councilman Street, and perhaps there's some misunderstanding, but we did at one point have a meeting actually scheduled that was canceled. So I apologize to members of council and to Mr. Street, but I did attempt to schedule that several times, and perhaps the failing is on my part and my office's part, but for the record, I apologize.
Well, the meeting with us was in regards to all the meetings that we have had, not only with you, but with other potential developers as being co-chairs of the land use.
It's my understanding that is the policy, yes.
That's what we've been doing. Nothing new.
I didn't know it, so thank you for the heads up.
Because I didn't know if you've been meeting with developers in my district that have plans.
We haven't had any. I hadn't heard because nobody's contacted us. Only the ones that contact us we've met with.
So it's not a policy or procedure, just that they contact you, which is
it was fine. Supposed to be with in land use, which we met. Councilman Tackett and I mentioned it at one of the meetings, land use meetings prior to this one. A while back, and it's never been enforced by land use, but it has recently been coming through with a couple of them.
Well, I'll go back and look at the meetings I missed and listen to the recordings to see what I missed. Thank you.
Thank you. Question for Ms. Fogarty. I just want to make sure, I assume it's correct that you wouldn't be enforcing any policy that applicants and developers and attorneys be meeting with co-chairs before the matter comes forward to this land use committee, not commenting on the voluntariness of their willingness to do so, but I would hope your department wouldn't, enforce, compel meetings with the co-chairs of land use.
No, we certainly have no interest, nor is it within our purview to enforce or not enforce anything that the council would choose to do. We are and have asked attorneys such as Larry and Sean that when they go out to the community, which is frequently with the council person, that we be invited so that early on the staff understands the issues of the community. But that is with the council person and with the community. It's not something that would be accepted.
I appreciate that. That's what I thought the answer would be. I just wanted to speak to the record. And the other thing that I just wanted to say is the obvious is it would create the appearance of conflict of interest if co-chairs who are just equal with the rest of us had some sort of one-on-one conversation with applicants that somehow that was being leveraged. And I knew that wouldn't be the case, but I would want to avoid any such conflict. Having said that, of course, applicants can meet with anyone, but to have an enforced policy where co-chairs would be obligated to meet with, or the applicants and their attorneys would be obligated to meet with the co-chairs, could have some unintended ramifications.
Councilman Weiner, if I just may address
yes.
that, and I apologize, I may have misspoke. This is nothing from the Department of Land Use that was required by the Department of Land Use. And maybe policy is the wrong word. It's my understanding from talking to different members of council that applicants are encouraged to meet with the Land Use Committee or the chair and co-chair. As you know, I regularly reach out to all of council members with all my projects, particularly rezonings. This obviously is not a rezoning, so I first reach out to Councilman Bell, who I thought was the local councilman. When I found out he wasn't, that he had been stripped of this area.
Stripped?
By Councilman Street, I reached out to Councilman Street, but perhaps policy was the wrong word.
Right, and in response to that, Sean, I think it's a good policy to reach out to the council person of the district. As you know, my personal policy has been for 18 years that I always have a civic leader in the room to avoid the appearance of impropriety that might be alleged by some civic leader should I end up supporting the project at a later time.
And if I could just make one last point, Chairman, I wanted to thank the department and the administration for working so closely with Westmoreland and its consultants in the review process and coordinating with DLDOT. It was very much appreciated by all the parties involved. I can tell you Westmoreland is excited about this project as well. So thank you, Ms. Fogarty and Mr. Haggerty and Land Use staff for your guidance and counsel in getting through the process.
Okay. Anything else?
I'm going to bring this issue up just to kind of have a small conversation about it so that it's not an issue necessarily we got to have a conversation about next Tuesday, but council suggested that we perhaps enter into deed restrictions in relationship to the use of Lamson's Lane. I'm going to suggest in the alternative that we work with DLDOT to get Lamson's Lane so duly marked and allow the police to stop the vehicles as opposed to code enforcement trying to stop the vehicles or to set up surveillance and things of this nature. Everybody has a place, and I didn't want you, we'll work to try to make sure we can tie that knot as tight as we can get it before it gets to you, you know, in your council meeting, but it will probably come in a little bit different form than what was, you know, discussed.
In that vein, what is the police jurisdiction for Lamson's Lane? Who has that?
Delaware State Police.
Okay.
It's a state route. State.
Yeah, the concern.
The count. Good. Could we recognize my legislative aide since she did attend a meeting with the police departments? But
Karen Barlow, legislative aide to Councilman Bell. Because I was going to ask a question about this anyway. The state police has the jurisdiction, but the county police have also had they can stop the people as well. But when you were talking about the trucking, the one thing that's been a real problem, and there has been a meeting with Councilman Bell's office, as well as Councilman Street, as well as the state police, the county police, the problem is that when they gave the truckers a ticket, the truckers contested it, and then it got thrown out of court. So when you were talking about that, I was kind of wondering, is this tying up the loose ends, going to prevent and stop making the police work so hard just for it to be thrown out?
Yeah, and I apologize to Mr. Haggerty, because I really, as I think about this, I should have discussed this with him in advance of today. I think the county has the authority, if it wanted to make this a code enforcement issue. I'm not suggesting that is the best, because Mr. Haggerty and Ms. Fogarty have limited resources. But when I heard from the community this very concern, and Councilman Bell this concern, I believe I did indicate with the county's approval, we would be willing to do that. And again, in fairness to Mr. Haggerty, I did not discuss this with him in advance, so he was caught off guard by this today. But that's a county resources issue. We will work with the county and the department trying to come up with something that best works for everybody over the course of the next week, certainly.
Councilman Spiler? I actually did have some discussion with this some months back when the county police actually put a move in over there to try to help. But I'm going to tell you, because that road was traditionally, before the Terminal Avenue was improved in Pigeon Point, that was for young lumber, the car haul, fuel tankers. Everyone used that road, because it was actually in much better condition than Terminal Avenue was, with the railroad tracks there and everything else. But that being said, from someone with an active CDL license, you don't want code. You need Del Dot to come in, put the correct signage up there, so that the state police and everyone else can enforce it. Because you know what? You can give me the code violation, I pay my code ticket, whatever, I'm going. You start giving me traffic tickets on my CDL license, my livelihood is at stake. And it's not like it used to be, where I could lose it in Delaware and go to Jersey. They're now nationwide network. If I lose my CDL in Delaware, I've lost it. So that's the enforcement tool, as Mr. Haggerty said. You want the state to put the proper signage up there, restricting it, and then come out gangbusters and enforce it, and the word will get out quick. GPS or not, they're not going to run down there if they're going to risk building up the points to lose their CDL license. Councilman Weiner?
Thank you. I just want to add to Councilman Smiley's comments that it would be a legal morass for the county to be responsible for providing tickets on Del Dot land, their right-of-way, or their appurtenances, and therefore it's intuitively logical that it should be a Del Dot issue, since all roadways are the sole and exclusive jurisdiction of the State Department of Transportation.
You're on the right path. Except you picked a wrong.
Okay.
I did.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, the council members.
All right, we have an ordinance to substitute number 1 to 13-055. Councilman Packett.
And Mr. Co-Chair, this was a department-generated ordinance that was more procedural and housekeeping, and I think it's probably more appropriate that they give us a synopsis and presentation out of this.
Eileen Fogarty, General Manager, Land Use. The ordinance you have this evening, this afternoon before you, is a relatively minor revision to the Village and Hamlet section of the code of the UDC. The ordinance was originally passed in 2009, and one of the things about form-based codes, all these terms,
they're highly specific. So what is sort of a natural progression is as we implement it, and we've been reviewing Whitehall, again, an exciting project, beautifully done. As we implement it, we find that there are just sections of it that are so tightly defined that it's difficult to get implemented and apply to the project. So I'm just going to summarize a few of the major points. One is, under the original code, there was a minimum density for each of the, I say districts, but T4, T5. And in certain environments, if you're building on top of transit, you often put in a minimum density. It's something you do in an urban place. We did not feel that there had to be a minimum density, so we provided a density range. In other words, if you're in a T5, which has a density of 13 to 27 under the code, we just said, you know, you can pick 13 or you can pick 27. You're not required to have a minimum. Second item, there's an additional park type. These names, Ramble is the new name for the park type. Again, I'm convinced this is how planners make their living coming up with this stuff. But what a ramble is that it will be a park that doesn't face directly on a road. In other words, you'll have some open space that's not directly on a road. People can access it, but it didn't have a term, so now it has a term, a ramble. There is in the Whitehall project, they have rear alleys, and it's really very, very positive for the circulation, the design, everything else. So there is now the addition of a requirement in the two denser districts, T4 and T5, for rear alleys. The next, there is if residential first floor units want at some place, sometime, to convert to live work or to convert to commercial. There was a discussion about the fact that they would already be built at 10 feet, not 11 feet, which is a commercial height, to allow that conversion without requiring that the floors be ripped out, which is kind of ridiculous, and that they get an 11-foot height. So it simply says if you're going to go from residential to commercial, you can keep your height of 10 feet. 20% of the commercial in the project can be single story. That's a new flexibility as opposed to a higher. The other last two items, the right-of-way for DelDOT shouldn't be counted in the park calculation. So the staff has gone through and modified the calculation requirements so that they don't include the right of way. And lastly, there are options for a comprehensive signage program for commercial and in residential districts. Those are the big ticket items. We'd be glad to answer any specific questions.
Any questions? Councilwoman?
Thank you. Other than Whitehall, has anyone taken advantage of the Village and Hamlet overlay? I see these as positive changes. Obviously, it's a lot easier to look at something that's in existence and understand what works and what doesn't work rather than just sitting around the table and trying to figure that out. I'm going to presume that you believe that by making some of these modifications that it makes it more friendly to a developer to use this overlay.
I think that's the motivation. And the project is, at least what we've seen to this point in time, is exceedingly well done. And so the issues that they ran into would be issues that anyone would run into.
Councilman Weiner?
Thank you. I'm supportive of this as well. The use of form-based zoning or smart code is overdue. I introduced Newcastle County Land Use Department to the concept 10 years ago at a workshop. We did actually employ the form-based zoning principles, working with Torti Gallus and Committed Associates in master planning the Claymont Renaissance, as you know. So we've had a project on the ground with Smart Code. However, Village Hamlet was designed either intentionally or unintentionally to fail. And it worked. It hasn't been used. I like the idea of having a range. Let's, for example, under T5 of 13 to 27 DUs per acre. That provides seamless conversion from residential to commercial. I like the idea of not having to seek a approval to go from 10 feet to 11 feet to reconstruct. The villages for 5,000 years have been evolving, and so as long as we stay within our percentages of commercial, office, and residential, they need to be able to seamlessly flow as the critical masses change and market conditions change over time. We also need to straighten an issue that I did battle with our friends in the fire marshal's office. As you know, with Claymont Renaissance, I went to Washington, D.C. and got a smart growth challenge grant out of EPA, worked with ULI to build a smart growth fire code that has been adopted by the more progressive fire marshals and progressive fire code officials throughout the country. And I want to include Claymont Fire Company in one of those, because they did accept the standards. Our fire marshal continues to be antediluvian, thinking that the fire marshal with the biggest toys when he dies wins. They're thinking that streets should be wide enough to double park the biggest fire trucks that can be invented. And it actually violates state law, which says that the state of Delaware Transportation Department, as I said before, has sole and exclusive jurisdiction over the roadways. If the fire marshal is given exclusive jurisdiction over the alleyways, they can't also impose no parking, limited no parking on the street. That goes and flies in the face of any village. Take a look down Newark's Main Street. You have limited on-street parking and at-grade parking behind it. Also, any fire truck driver will tell you they're not worried about cars being in the way. Bill Bell will tell you they just punch a hole right through the windows of those cars and stick the hose through. It's not an issue. There's a number of essays about this throughout the country, but I'm interested in seeing how this developed. We had an earlier iteration of this in 1997. Only Penrose and I were there at the time. The amendments in 2007 didn't do anything. So hopefully this will provide some incentives to build true villages and hamlets to take advantage of not only it's a left-wing and a right-wing conspiracy, good for the economy, good for the environment, good for social equity, all the legs of smart growth.
Councilman Cartier.
Thank you. Councilman Weiner is pointing out that there are jurisdictions that all play a role in land use planning. We're one of them. There are two others, and we don't mesh. And especially when it comes to recreating traditional neighborhoods, traditional communities, where the auto is not the dominant player. So those are real conflicts that go on. Just to go and give you the detail of this, I'm glad we're bringing forward this further revision to the Village and Hamlet using Smart Code. I was handed the Smart Code ordinance or Village and Hamlet revision by that time, at that time, Council Member Stephanie McClellan, who left this body and resigned. And I took her work, furthered it, and that revision was a critical revision where we lowered the acreage requirement for building Village and Hamlet. We went from where it was to 50 acres for a hamlet, 100 acres for a village, if I'm correct, which is much more kind of capable of being built in New Castle County, given our modest land area and the size of, let's say, most farms that exist. They're in that range. So with that, we adopted the Smart Code standards in the revised Village and Hamlet, which will allow using the form-based zoning and these transects, which give the guiding planning principles for development of this type of community. So I'm very pleased that to hear that Whitehall is coming along. It is the first one that will use this new code, which is state-of-the-art, the most progressive code that I'm aware of that's being utilized in the United States today to build more walkable communities that integrate a mix of uses, and where, you know, people don't have to necessarily own two cars. They could probably have a family unit own one car and maybe perhaps take advantage of mass transit and all the amenities that they would need for their daily lives could conceivably be, you know, within walking distance, because inherent in the transects are uses that would permit that to happen. So I'm very pleased to see this and the revisions going on to make it more friendly and more, you know, able to be used and feasible in New Castle County. And I just want to underscore that tension that exists between New Castle County Land Use, DLDOT, and the Fire Marshal's Office, because these are conflicting criteria and conflicting standards. Thank you.
Aye.
You know, the tension that you've described, as I have looked over the process, and as I say looked over it in great amount of detail, is one of the critical issues, both in timing, in what applicants have to go through in terms of not having contingencies, but also in terms of the kind of a product we achieve. And one thing that I'm working with the county exec, and we will be coming hopefully in January to all of you for a presentation on what we plan to do, is how we are reaching out and what we plan to do in order to create a much more seamless and coordinated approach with all the state agencies, but DLDOT in particular. So this issue is, I think, a critical issue.
Anything else? From council, from the public. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of council. Larry Tarabikos. I represent the developers of Whitehall, and just wanted to make a couple of comments. I actually almost left because Councilman Smiley was saying something earlier about giving tickets for people that are overweight. But maybe I misunderstood. I saw Mr. Haggerty get up at the same time I did. Sorry, George. But
no,
we've been going through the process, and we're very excited about the Village One that we'll hopefully be bringing to you either in January or February. It's been a lot of work. We spent a lot of time. Ms. Fogarty, I think, has been having fun with it, had planned tape all over her conference room wall in a way that I've never seen it before, but we've been spending a lot of time addressing a lot of the issues and getting the plan ready. A lot of these things are tweaks that we discovered that were, it's a complicated code, and placemakers who prepared it, it doesn't necessarily fit all jurisdictions. So what we're discovering is that there are some tweaks that are needed as you go through the process. But we are excited about it. To answer Ms. Kilpatrick's question, twofold. One, I do have two clients, actually, that are looking at it right now. But you have to remember, and this is something that I've asked that Ms. Fogarty take a look at, and council, it's only, you can only use it south of the canal, these village and hamlet provisions. So I don't remember why we did that. I guess it was, we thought it was politically popular and easier to adopt to not have it applied. I don't even remember now why we did that. But I think that's a mistake. And I think that these types of communities would be great infill north of the canal where you have 50 acres. And maybe we need to lower the acreage as well, because we need to encourage more of these. But I think they're great. And one of the things that I've been advocating lately, the governor's office has sort of fell on deaf ears, but there's a lot of components to economic development. There's a lot of components when you're trying to attract jobs to this state. They want to see that you have the type of communities and the type of housing. It's not a big surprise that AstraZeneca is choosing to be in an area of Maryland that's full of these types of communities. They're beautiful communities as opposed to New Castle County, where we don't have destination-type communities where people just go and spend the day there because they're fun places to be and attractive places. And we don't have that diversification. And so we're hoping that this will also be something that starts helping with economic development. And there's a lot more to it than that. But yeah, we would encourage you to support these amendments, and there may be more in the future. But I think your question's a good one, Ms. Kilpatrick, and we do need to encourage these communities even north of the canal as well. And maybe this will help educate people on how to use it more. Thank you.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we discussed earlier about community outreach, just want to make sure that it is on the record that the applicant and counsel for the applicant has held several meetings, regional meetings, of the communities in the area of Whitehall. In fact, our last one was actually in a conference room over at Walmart in Middletown because of the size of the crowd that came. And so this has been presented, the concept, how it'll affect folks and what it means to the state of Delaware and to the county and everything. So, having a lot of public involvement and commitment. So I just compliment the applicant and its legal counsel.
Councilman Cartier.
Yes, going to your comments, Larry, I think the reason why we limited it to below the canal, the application of this new ordinance, was to incentivize the development of traditional neighborhood communities below the canal in contrast to, the S-zone suburban McMansion, to give more options and a greater variety of housing and living choices for new development below the canal. That being said, I don't have any issues with maybe looking at you broadening that application, but finding 50 or 100 acres in other parts of Newcastle County, that could be quite a feat to do that. Maybe a sensible change to the acreage standard, applying that above the canal might be something that's worth exploring.
Well, just for, if you may, for example, Cavaliers Country Club, I've heard recently it's under contract, so why wouldn't you want to encourage something like this there?
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Eileen?
What we've both been discussing, we've started to look at as one of the initiatives for this winter and spring, and what I've seen, and we've started to talk about what's the appropriate size. The elements of these types of codes, they don't all have to be on hundreds and hundreds of acres. You could take most projects and apply the elements. They may not have room for the alleys, for example, but there are a lot of the elements that really would make a difference, even in a small project.
Mm-hmm.
And in some of the larger, reason that this is taped all over my wall, in the conference room, in some of the other projects that have come through all north of the canal, we've said, look at this. Can you apply some of these elements to what you're doing? Because they just create, it's an overused word, but they create just much more intimate and livable spaces. And I think we'll be looking at size, but you don't have to be that large to apply the elements.
Councilman Wyman.
Thank you. It's very exciting to hear this conversation. Just to enhance a little bit on General Manager Fogarty's points, we create value, we create intrinsic sense of place. When we ask more from our developers than simply the same old, compared to other counties, we don't ask them to raise the bar. And it might be only a 10% additional cost ask for architectural excellence, quality of construction materials, and reflection upon the historic elements in that community. Those were the three principles, the three legs, that made the Claymont Renaissance design guidelines what they are. Because otherwise, density is not viewed as a friend of the community. It's viewed instead as an opportunity to build future slums. But when you build a design guideline based upon those three principles, and you then begin to raise the bar. And some developers do it already, automatically. Some are not as enlightened As far as Larry's comments, I really commend what Whitehall is doing. My only concern was, as market conditions change, that they won't hesitate to come back to land use to seek horizontal and vertical integration of the mixed-use elements. And I recognize, from a marketing perspective, we're not there, but we may be in the future. And for those of us that recognize they're not making any more land anymore, density is the trade-off for open space preservation for our future generations.
Anything else from council? Anything from the public? Other? Public comment?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right.